This morning, we're in the second week of an August worship series titled Thirsty, which is based on Rhoda Preston's book, Thirsty, a spiritual means of grace. And last week, when we started, Rhoda put forward the proposition that thirst can be a great way for us to connect with God. It can be a way, sometimes when we're uncomfortable, sometimes when things aren't going right, those can be those opportunities where God has a chance and a space to kind of work in our lives and reveal God's self to us in a new way, and we can kind of grow in beautiful ways. And so I gave, for those of you who were here last week, I gave you homework and to think about the things that you're complaining about and lifting those up to God and listen about how God might respond to those cries of our hearts. This week, we are in a very different chapter of the Bible, and we just heard a story about Jesus as a party. And side note, the scriptures that we've chosen for this month reflect the author's favorite chapters, because she's going to come at the end of the month. So Rhoda also highlighted this particular story as one that she really loved and valued, and it's a fun story. Jesus is at a party. He went to a lot of parties in his life. If you were to read the Gospels, a lot of them are him hanging out and having conversations at the dinner table doing things with his friends while they were just goofing off. You might not think of the Gospels that way, but check it out. There's a lot of table time. And I think we kind of know that a lot of times we find in our lives a sense that sometimes the greatest aha moments or things that we discover happen when we're gathering with people and we're eating with them and we're celebrating with them, and maybe some mistakes happen along the ways. In our particular scripture for this day, it's not just any kind of party that they're hanging out, though. They're gathered for a wedding. And that just puts it in a whole other category, doesn't it? Because whenever we gather for those major life celebrations, it's more than a dinner party. We might have some expectations that when we have friends over, we want it to go well. But if it's a wedding, that's right, that's next level, isn't it? Whenever we're getting ready for things. And whether it's a wedding or a baptism, or whether it might be Confirmation Sunday or a funeral or any kind of life ritual, we have this desire to have those kinds of celebrations be perfect, right? We just want everything to go right. And when that is well aimed, we know it's because we want to show honor. We want to experience the joy of whomever we're celebrating. It has the best intentions. But as Rhoda points out in her book, when it comes to weddings, there's no perfect weddings. Any of you have a perfect wedding ever? I know, like, you're probably wondering what my wedding stories are. They're funny. if you come on Wednesday, I'll tell some of my wedding stories. They're hilarious. Always funny when you get married and have your reception at a church, and it's the church you are the student pastor of. So, like, you can just imagine what happens when your wedding has like 40 children involved in the service and all the things. It's great. Anyways, but I'm guessing for most of you, you probably have a few funny stories about stuff that went wrong on a big day, whether it was a wedding or maybe even a baptism or a graduation ceremony, whatever it was. I mean, life happens, and sometimes in those imperfections, they might cause us to cringe, they might cause us to chuckle, but they are those moments that become memorable. And of course, that's the kind of wedding that we are told about in our scripture lesson today. Jesus is at a wedding, and he was just hanging out at the service, at the parties. In those days, wedding parties could last for days. It wasn't just a three-hour party afterwards. I mean, you're just talking about hanging out for a week, maybe, and celebrating with the community. But of course, in this particular story, we hear that the wedding problem was that they had run out of wine. And so Mary, as the caring, I mean, she must have been like an awesome prototypical church kitchen lady, right? You know, like, it's not all perfect, I gotta fix it. And she knows the guy who can fix it, her son. And so she asks Jesus to help. And what does he say to her when she asks for help? Woman. Don't you love that in the Bible? She's like, if your kid referred to you as woman, if my son, who is 13, said, if I asked my son James to do something and he said, woman, oh no, we'd have a separate follow-up conversation. But Jesus responds to his mom and says, you know, like, my time hasn't come, I'm not helping out. I love that particular response because in some ways, especially because my kid is 13, it's a very teenage response. Like, I see the Jesus eye roll. He doesn't want, his mom wants him to do something and he's kind of scoffing at her like, I can't believe my mom. She's so embarrassing. That's how I interpret the story. I'm not saying that's what it really says. I'm just saying that's my life. I'm a teenage mom, and so everything has that lens right now. So Mary wants Jesus to help with a problem. Jesus says no, but then, of course, what happens? He decides to go help out, and we have the famous turning water into wine story. And we, of course, are left with this image, this beautiful image of God's grace creating something miraculous. And in the Gospel of John, we're told this is the first of the miracles, which is kind of interesting and weird, right? Like, you think that Jesus' first miracle might be the feeding of the 5,000 or healing people, but no, it's a party trick. And we are given this image of God celebrating with us. You know, and that God enters into all parts of our lives, creating abundance. And in Rhoda's book, Thirsty, when she talks about this particular story, she reminds us that this story teaches us that God's grace is abundant and tangible. And that's kind of what I want to focus on today, how God's grace is abundant and tangible. Yes, we have this story of a miracle of water to wine, and we could go on and on about the beautiful symbolic imagery of what that means for our lives and all the other pieces, but I want to go a little more practical today, like Rhoda, and talk about how God's grace is abundant and tangible. And she argues that, you know, with this miracle, you know, God entered in and just provided what they needed. And there was something wonderful. She has this image, too, about how Jesus providing this wine allowed for the party to be resurrected and to carry on. And just the joy that comes when God enters into our lives. And as we talk about and think about God's grace being abundant and tangible, just kind of like that wine they could drink, I have been thinking a lot about the part of the story where often it gets overlooked, and it's about the part of how Jesus turned water into wine. So he doesn't just magically he does kind of wave a magic wand in a way because it's water to wine, but what does he do? When there is no more wine, he asks people to help. He asks the stewards to go fill these giant jars, right? And they say in the scriptures that it's a purification jar. The Bible does actually say that they probably held about 20 to 30 gallons. That's like rain barrel sized, right? I mean, I don't have do you have a 20 to 30 gallon jug in your kitchen? I don't. But that's because in those days, they kept purification jars that held water for washing up or other things. It wasn't really water they drank. It was water they used for their purification rituals or just getting ready for dinner. And so Jesus told them to take these large jars and ask people to fill it with water. And we often overlook that part, but that was no small feat, right? Asking someone to fill six jars that each hold 20 to 30 gallons, and they didn't have a faucet. It's not like our fancy new kitchen where there's the special spigot, and you just magically, you know, stick the faucet into your jar. They would have had to go and get all of that water. But we are told that they do. And because of their efforts, Jesus has something to work with, right? He has that water. He turns it into wine. God's grace is abundant and tangible. So I've been thinking a lot about those poor stewards that were put on that crazy task of grabbing all of that water, all that hard work, and how their simple efforts were a part of Jesus' miracle. And I think that is a big part of the story about how throughout the miracles of Jesus, there are always these points where people are part of Jesus' miracle story. God's grace made abundant and tangible is often because people are participating in the story with Jesus. And so I was thinking to myself about those stewards carrying the water and thinking about ways in my own life that I have seen people kind of carry that water in my life in the last week or two, and how God has used that to be an opportunity for grace, and how God has transformed it into a moment of joy or celebration. So that's this is my homework. You didn't know you were going to get homework again, but you're going to get homework again. This week, what I want you to think about is, how has God used something ordinary to become a sign of abundant grace, right? Like turning that water into wine. What is that ordinary task that God has turned from a mundane thing into something that was just refreshing and brought joy and delight? And for me, I have a lot of examples, but I'm going to limit it to two because you don't want to listen to all of them, okay? The first is that earlier this month, I had the joy of going with our middle school and high school students to Second Harvest. Now, for those of you who haven't had a chance to go to Second Harvest is basically our area food bank consortium. And that is where food shelves go to shop. They go to Second Harvest Heartland. There are multiple locations located throughout the metro. We went to the Brooklyn Park packing facility. And when you go to Second Harvest, you help pack food. Because the premise of a lot of these food banks is that they will receive donations from various companies that come in giant containers. I mean, even bigger than those water jugs that I was talking about. We had literally bags. There was a ton of potatoes in one bag. That's not an exaggeration. It weighed a ton, okay? And so our work was to sort potatoes, tons of potatoes. Again, not exaggerating. There were tons of potatoes. Those things were on pallets. You know, they had to have forklifts moving them. And whenever the kids finally started getting some potatoes down, they would just raise the pallet up. And then when the kids got done with like a bag, they would bring in another bag and they'd have to keep going. And so anyways, we were here at Second Harvest. We're sorting potatoes. We're trying to do some good for the food bank so that food shelves could, you know, have these ordinary potatoes. And I'll tell you that for the first couple minutes of being at Second Harvest, there was a lot of the energy and excitement and trying to figure out how to do good work. And we were sorting potatoes. But then what happens? You get a little tired, right? And the novelty wears off. And you get that moment of wondering, why did I let Pastor Stina rope me into this? You know, she's a little crazy. And but our students somehow, once even that kind of monotony set in, and the hard work and its physical work set in, just like, you know, like those water jars would have been really heavy, they worked with each other in such a way where they decided they wanted to see how many potatoes they could pack and all the good they could do, because they're good Methodists, right? They knew they were going to have to try and do all the good they can. And we were there with another United Methodist youth group, so they decided that we were going to do more than our friends from White Bear. And so they started a friendly competition, and kids started creating different teams and techniques to see, like, how many potatoes can we get and sort and get ready for the food shelf in time. And by the time we were done with our two-hour shift, they had packed almost 6 tons of potatoes. Yeah, right. And they were all smiles, and the room was full of joy from packing potatoes. And I know you're like, I would like these 10 children to come over to my house. I have a list, right? But for me, it was like that example of those of those wine stewards filling the jars, right? You know, you're doing this ordinary task, and then suddenly, somehow, God's grace just kind of enters the room, and you realize that what you're doing is, you know, this amazing work. And they were so proud, and I'm so proud, of the work that they had done, that, of course, then we had to go bowl and eat pizza, because that's what you do when you're a youth group. But, you know, I share it again because it was like, for me, I've never actually seen water turned into wine, but when I saw the work of those students packing the potatoes, to me, that was like that experience. That was that experience of taking something ordinary and, you know, where people feel like they don't have enough, right? Because when you shop at a food shelf, it's usually because you don't have enough, you know, and it's God pouring out God's grace to say there's more than enough, and the joy that comes in the service and the sharing. The other one that I wanted to share about just experiencing that kind of water turning into wine and abundant and tangible ways that God's grace is known is what's happening with our new kitchen. Many of you know that we have just recently built a commercial kitchen. And prior to that, it was basically a kitchenette that was smaller than many of our home kitchens. And now we have this amazing commercial kitchen because of the generosity of this congregation. And I can't say thank you enough for all of you who have been a part of that process, both through the giving of your gifts, as well as those of you who have given of your time to help get it built. And for me, one of those experiences of seeing kind of water turning into wine and God's grace being abundant and tangible happened last week when we gathered for breakfast. It wasn't necessarily the first meal we've had in the kitchen, but it was the first time we had a Sunday morning meal. And our hospitality team was kind enough to kind of test things out with us and have a breakfast together. And I'll tell you that there was definitely a lot of anxiety about what it takes to kind of do that first event, right? We have plates now. What does that mean? You know, this big convection oven is amazing and beautiful, but kind of scary because it could fit like a child in there. You know, this is crazy. All this equipment, this is weird stuff. But collectively, the hospitality team, the kitchen management team, everybody who has been working so hard on getting this kitchen outfitted through basically what I would say is like carrying that water, right? Filling that jar, 1 gallon of water after a time. Through that process, when we gathered for breakfast last Sunday, I think many of us were surprised by how much joy we felt. I don't know why I'd be surprised to say it was surprising to feel joyful while you were eating at a church breakfast, but it was like more than a nice to see you kind of moment. I'm looking at our board chair because I think she's with me on that. Like, it was just this water into wine kind of thing where suddenly God transformed it into something bigger than we even knew. We just thought we were lugging water around. We just thought we were making breakfast. God showed up and created something that was more extravagant than we could ever have anticipated. And it had kind of that lasting impact on folks where they're like, I just experienced, I'm going to name Becky here, where she said it's like having communion. Like, oh, we had communion before we were going to have communion. We had real breaking of the bread together. And it wasn't necessarily something that you can script or manufacture, but it just is that beautiful, tangible, abundant grace of God at work. So today, I want to say thank you for the ways that this congregation continues to turn water into wine. Often by those ways that are really ordinary, it might come through slogging potatoes from one big giant sack to something to be used for the food shelf. It might be by figuring out the right kind of plate to have in the kitchen or cracking eggs for an egg bake. But every time we make that commitment and we give that metaphorical gallon of water over to Jesus, we find that God has space and place to work with us and through us, and that our lives become that wonderful, extravagant wine poured out for the world, where there's joy and there is happiness. And so I am deeply grateful for the ways that you continue to bless the world, to bless this church, and for the ways that we will do so in the year to come. So thank you for filling those jars. Amen.